Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. Excited to be joined today by Mr. Bo Button, who is the president and CTO of Atlas Reality. He's doing some really cool stuff in the location-based games, virtual real estate, all sorts of different stuff. I'm excited to talk all about it today. We're going to talk about virtual finance and digital assets. It's going to be a fun conversation. Before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Please visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Bo, how are you doing, man?
Doing well. Just trying to stay cool down here in the South. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good, man. So tell me, today I want to talk about virtual finance and digital assets. And so when I think of that, I immediately think of crypto and blockchain and all that stuff. Like, so where do we start with this today?
Yeah, I mean, I've steered clear of kind of the Web3 movement. As a technologist, I appreciate blockchain, but as a product-driven kind of company, we've tried to make our products as simple as possible, and there's really nothing about Web3 onboarding that's simple yet.
So, now hang on a second. You're saying we don't need Web3 for anything?
I didn't say anything. I think there's some interesting verticals where Web3 is useful, but for us in games right now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Wait a second. We can create stuff without Web3, because I heard that everything had to be Web3. Like, the future of the entire world was Web3. Like, there was no way we would survive without it. You're saying there's a way.
There is. Holy moly,
there's a way.
It's earth-shattering news. But yeah, I crossed paths with somebody who told me that there was going to be a Web3 game engine. We would build the entire game. I was like, no, dude, that's not something I'm interested in. But yeah, Atlas Reality, the company that I'm a co-founder of and president and CTO, we are a play-to-earn gaming platform, virtual real estate, and we are off-chain. There's no dovetails right now into crypto at all. It's all fiat. You make cash. You earn cash, rather.
Well, and people talk about using Web3 for, you can buy assets in the game and you could buy and sell them to other character, other people and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I did that 25 years ago on a bulletin board on a dial-up. Yes. And I bought, somebody's sword from some game. And I didn't have blockchain then, figured it out. And by the way, people like Fortnite make like billions of dollars a year selling Patrick Mahomes jerseys or bunny costumes, whatever, and there's no blockchain for it. Like, somehow or another, we're able to do this stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, look, you can use a standard relational database to power a solution like that. There are some elements of like the distribution, the transparency, the whole, right. It's a public ledger. There's an element to that that I like, where people can kind of scrutinize it. But you could also, build a static website or some type of dynamic website that, kind of shows the transactional history of items. But yeah, I subscribe to the same kind of theory as users. We build games, and Web3 is not part of that right now for us, even in the virtual real estate space.
Well, I love that you guys are kind of the, you know, didn't require that and you're able to build this. So how did you get into this? How did Atlas Reality come to be?
Yeah, so originally we started a company called Cerberus Interactive. It's the same entity, we just rebranded, and we were really an independent game development shop. We weren't creating our own games, we were building games for other companies. I've spent most of my career owning or operating an ISV, building software for other businesses. And my current business partner saw me. He was in user acquisition, marketing, and said, I want to create or I want to build games. And I was foolish enough to say, you know what? Let's do that. I quickly realized that it's equally as is just terrifying to build games for people as it is to build line of business apps. It's not as fun. Games are fun, but building games for other people is not fun. So we pivoted and we started. Really, honestly, we were building location-based games because we were inspired by Pokemon Go and Niantic.
Yeah, which is very cool.
Yeah, it came out right around the same time we were pivoting, and I was like, I have a lot of background in GIS. Spent 10 years in the distressed real estate space building software for liquidating distressed real estate. So I said, you know what? Let's build location-based games, and that's how we started. The virtual real estate side of this, Atlas Earth, our first game was called Atlas Empires. The second game, which is the game that's most popular, is, it was inspired by the Web3 movement. I saw Sandbox. I saw Decentraland. I saw Upland. And I'm like, man, this is cool. Location-based, you can sell real estate, but like, I don't need the blockchain. So kind of going back to what we just talked about.
Yeah.
But that's how I got into this.
So you have two games. You have Atlas Empires, you mentioned, and then Atlas Earth. So Atlas Empires, can I like go, is that like playing like Clash of Clans or something in my own neighborhood?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
It is. It's a location-based inspired Clash of Clans / Pokemon Go mashup.
Okay.
It's been out for almost 4 years now. It was commercially or financially, it was a success, but I will be honest with you, the community has dwindled because Atlas Earth represents 99.999% of our revenue. So we've been focusing on that.
Okay.
But yes, you can install it today. It's still relatively active, but... it's definitely not as entertaining because you can't find other people to join your empire. That's the hardest part right now is it's Atlas Empires and there aren't enough people to kind of participate in your empire.
So what do people do in Atlas Earth?
Yeah. So right now it's arguably not a game. We have to, because of legal reasons, market it as a game, but you come in, we give everybody one free piece of land. So we call them parcels, much like your tax assessor would call it. And it's 30 feet by 30 feet. It's based on a real map. So where you're standing right now, based on your GPS, radio, you can buy that land, and that land has one of four rarities, and it's random. So it's a common, a rare, an epic, or a legendary. And each one of those generates rent per second. So that's kind of the game loop, is you own a piece of land, you either buy it or you do something in the game to earn our in-game currency in order to buy it. A lot of people just buy it or they use the free one. And then from there, it generates rent per second. Obviously, if you buy one piece of land, your RPS is not going to be enough to move any needle. It's fractions of a penny per second. But you can watch ads. You can buy products at brick and mortar merchants that are partners with us. We've got about 20 or so brick and mortar partners where you can go swipe your Visa or MasterCard and in real time get rewarded with our in-game currency, which then lets you buy land. So we do have a lot of free-to-earn players that are in there getting land and not spending money and generating rent per second. Once that rent accumulates to $5, you can redeem it for cash. So that's kind of the name of the game, is your rent per second accumulates. You can either redeem it for additional AB, Atlas Bucks, our in-game currency, or you can have it deposited straight into your checking account.
So I see on your website you have partnerships with Burger King and Annie Ann's and Popeyes and Sonic, Jimmy John's, all these companies. So,
yes, sir.
So does that mean if I download the app, I can go to like my local Burger King and like it exists in the game?
It's a little different. So you won't see Burger King in the game, but what we have are location-based offers or missions. The industry refers to them as offers in the game because of the naming around like an in-game mission. You have an option to enroll your Visa or MasterCard. And this was a huge hurdle for us because it's a video game asking for your credit card. And it's like, why? Well, we only ask for the 16-digit card number. We don't ask for the CVV2 or expiration. And then we reach out to Visa and MasterCard and we get a random account. And that allows us to basically get notifications when you actually purchase at one of our participating merchants. We then use that to give you an in-game pop-up, and there's a conversion rate. Every merchant's kind of different, but if you were to go buy a Whopper right now and your credit card was enrolled, you would get a push notification the minute you drove away from the cashier, and it would say, hey, you spent $10, you got 10 Atlas bucks.
Okay. So is that a – so do – do any of these other merchants help promote you guys? I mean, was
not yet. I mean, it's still a tough sell. You know, the Web3 movement, I mean, it hasn't all been bad for us. Not that it's been particularly bad, but it's like we didn't jump into that. But the metaverse and Decentraland, like these brands are obviously aware of what most or some people are considering the future. I'm not as convinced. But no, we don't have any one particular brand that's like really a fanboy. They're all kind of getting their feet wet.
Okay.
I'd say, you know, Burger King has been the most successful for us outside of Speedway, which is a gas station on the East Coast. That was the most successful primarily because the average ticket price there is about $50 because fuel is expensive and Whoppers aren't.
So does somebody like Burger King is actually giving you guys money? Like they give you 1% of sales or something like that?
That's exactly right. So basically, we have a BD team, biz dev goes out. They all come from the food quick service industry, and we iron out contracts where we get a commission on the sales. So it's really not a cost to Burger King. It's not a discount to the player. That's a big, from a perception, they don't want to offer discounts, but we get a commission. So some of these range between 10% and, you know, 4%. So if a player goes and spends $100 and we get $10, which is great in this industry. You know, our initial IAP in-app purchase starting price is $4.99, and Apple takes 30% of that. And once it hits the checking account, it's basically nothing. So 10% on a large ticket is really, it's good from a revenue perspective for us.
Okay. And so business is good for you guys. You guys are growing. Yeah, and
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the game's doing well. We're growing, you know, nicely. We've had some technical headwinds with scale. I think we've navigated most of those. Right now, the biggest headwind for me, despite me being on the technical side of the organization, I also do all of the hiring, is finding people. Despite us being kind of flat and not having an office and broadening, you know, where we hire from, it's still hard to find good talent.
How big is your team?
Right now we have 29 employees, full-time employees.
Okay. So on the engineering side, are you guys using like Unity or something to build the game?
We are, yeah. So the mobile game, my background is in enterprise.net, okay. Not the most popular stack, but...
Me too. It's all good.
I'm a C-sharp guy through and through. Started off with BB, ASP when I was in high school. And
me
it just,
too.
It works for me.
Me too.
But yeah, when we started looking at game engines, I naturally
I won't tell anybody.
It's too late, man. I've got a few shirts that say C sharp. I'm out of the closet when it comes to my affinity for C sharp. But yeah, I chose Unity because you use C sharp. I had no idea if it was better than Unreal. I did some due diligence. There were some other engines, but yes, we are a Unity game development shop, and our back end stack, everything is .NET Core, C sharp, all the way through and through.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been doing .NET since it came out 20 years ago myself.
Yeah, no, I remember when it was ASP Plus, and I was like, why is there something new? And then I saw, and for better or for worse, web forms. It was an enterprise. Everybody jumped in. And when I realized how much less work and code I had to write, I was like, you know what? I'm done. Web forms are great. And then, you know, we did a 180, and here I am. Our web apps are MVC, and it seems like I'm still writing ASP-style code.
So what kind of scalability issues do you have? It's just, you know, you get certain thousands of users and how it all connects to the back end.
Yeah.
Like back end issues connecting to the game that's running on their app. That's, or what are your challenges? So
the game it's a real-time connection, so we leverage WebSockets. This was a first for me at this scale. I have built, you know, real-time, you know, finance apps, but it wasn't anything like this. They weren't event-based, so we have a lot of in-game events, which is a concurrency issue.
Yeah.
And when we built the platform, what I should have done is follow kind of the stack exchange architecture, keep it stupid simple, use SQL Server, cache the shit out of things, and just roll with it. But I thought, I was trying to be more intelligent than I really am. And ultimately, I chose a technology from Microsoft called Orleans. And the reason I chose it, because we decided to use blob storage as our storage mechanism. I'm going into the weeds here, but long story short, it was the wrong decision. And we ended up having to basically refactor the entire application to kind of look more like a standard web application. And
okay.
less creative, you know, just we were our own enemy here, just trying to be. I tried to get ahead of the scale. In reality, what I ended up doing was preventing the scale. wasn't my intent, but we still leverage Orleans heavily. We just, I think the expression is everything looks like a nail when you have a hammer. And I thought Orleans was my hammer. And I went in there and the team just used Orleans for everything. And that was the wrong decision.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of a SQL database usually solves like 90% of the problem.
Guess what? We are now 100% Microsoft Hyperscale SQL based. And it has proven to be it's incredible. I was doing this 20 years ago, building, you know, line of business apps, and I didn't think that it was the right choice, but it was most definitely the right choice.
Awesome. Well, eventually you'll get to some scale, some scale where it makes sense to look at something else, you know, but that's like that's a future Bo problem, not a today Bo problem.
Honestly, I hope it's not a future Bo problem. I hope there's somebody else that inherits that, because I always joke, I used to have a full head of hair, but I am completely bald. The stress, the cortisol, it's taken a toll on me.
Well, so tell me, you're one of the co-founders of this company, right?
Yes,
and
sir.
And so tell me, who are the other co-founders? Tell me about them.
So technically, we started off with two co-founders. My partner, Sami. Sami is the younger brother of a high school friend of mine. He's always had a knack for sales. He moved to Los Angeles. He was a very early employee at a fintech company called Acorns. It's a micro-investment platform where they do roundups like your spare change.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. So he was employee 10 or 11. He cut his teeth there learning about user acquisition and marketing. We've kept in touch. We had a previous startup. We had an anti-social network called Memorandum that was ahead of its time. But yeah, he was the one that was – he's the gamer. He's the one that really wanted to own and operate a game development company. But today we also have, as of about 2 years ago, a third co-founder, which was our employee number one. But we 2 years ago recognized that he is really a co-founder, even though he was technically an employee. And now we consider, you know, him a third co-founder. So it's Sami Khan and then Morgan Moon are my other two co-founders.
Okay. So you're the CTO, but do you spend much of your time writing code these days? Or you said it's mostly hiring people.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've always been kind of like the in between the tech and the biz. I can talk to anybody. Most of the developers I've worked with are kind of like black box developers or savants. They're kind of socially awkward. Not all of them. I know I'm stereotyping here, but yeah, here lately, I don't do a lot of actual coding for the business. I do a lot of research and I'm still continuously learning, but I'd say 80% of my responsibility right now is really finding talent. I have a knack for that. It's not something I love. I don't dislike it, but it could be challenging. But yeah, I don't contribute a whole lot of code. I tend to be the one who spearheads an initiative and then backs away and delegates. Like infrastructure as code, we, you know, 3 years ago adopted Terraform. That was something that really resonated with me, you know, using the Azure portal to create, you know, 200 resources for a new environment. I'm like, there's got to be a better way. And I wasn't convinced it was Azure Resource Manager. But yeah, I don't write as much code as I really would like to, but someday.
Well, I ask these questions because a lot of people who are listening today, they're like, I need to hire a CTO to go build my software. Well, a lot of CTOs don't write a lot of code. And so I think that's the thing I want to highlight here is, you know, did you early on when the company very, very first started?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So when it was just the three of us, I was sort of the back end, Morgan was the front end, and that worked extremely well. And as we grew, obviously, I kind of started to slowly but surely back away and delegate. It wasn't a trust thing. It was just having been doing this literally. I started when I was 8 years old. It's like you can identify rabbit holes pretty quickly. So I would say the other responsibility I have is letting the team know that there's a rabbit hole and we should probably start, you know, do a 180 and go backwards. But I'd say it took us about 3 years before I kind of just stopped writing code in its entirety. There's only a few areas of the business where I felt early on that I only trusted my, like anything to do with finance, like integrating with IAPs for Apple and Google. I kind of owned the architecture and implementation for that because it touched money. But with the current app, we use Stripe and we do, I didn't have to put my hands in the which is nice. It is nice.
Well, I'm glad we're discussing this because I think it's important for people to understand, you know, what does a CTO do and how does the job change over time? And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, early on you started and then as time has went on, the role has changed a lot. And I think the problem for a lot of entrepreneurs is they think hiring a CTO is like going to be their lead developer and write all the software, and which can be the case. But if a company grows and scales, what they need from that person is actually totally different. They need them to do what you're doing today. And I think CTOs should always be good at proof of concepts, making technology decisions, right? Trying to kick the tires and figure things out. But also something else I think you alluded to about the rabbit holes is also asking the questions that nobody else asks or knows how to ask or will think of. And it just comes from doing this for long enough. You just see the rabbit holes. You know, I always refer to it as like seeing the landmines and seeing around the corner. You know, like people just don't think that way, but you've done this long enough that you foresee these problems. So
no, it's exactly right. And, you know, my partner saw me is always kind of, I would say, confused or amazed. It's like, well, why didn't the team identify this? And I'm just like, it's like a musician who's been playing piano since they were 3 years old versus somebody who graduated high school and decided to, like, you still know how to play piano, but like you're in tune, your intuition is just, it's different. I'm on Slack passively and I'll look at the engineering channels, and I'd say at least two or three times a week, I'm just like, no, bad idea. And I'm not one to just say no, bad idea. I've done this before. This is why we probably shouldn't do that. I honestly, that's probably the most enjoyable part of this is helping, you know, the younger engineers kind of learn and, you know, get in tune with like finding these rabbit holes or mines, like you said.
Well, and I love the conversation about, you know, why didn't they see this? Why don't they have the ability to do this? And my response is usually, well, if they did, they would be a CTO somewhere else.
Yeah, no, that's
they
exactly
probably,
right.
They probably wouldn't. I would work for them.
Right? Yeah, and look, like, as a co-founder, I've always been one like I want people to do well. And if it's not with Atlas Reality, it won't break my heart. So like if one of our employees graduates and becomes an exceptional potential CTO candidate, there would be no hard feelings if he jumped ship and went and started his own venture. And that's just a fact of life. So yeah, it's confusing to my non-technical co-founder, but he gets it now. You know, not everybody's, you know, their experience levels are very different. And, you know, the way that they look at things, honestly, it's sometimes it has to do with perspective. I've got some engineers that are very kind of like narrow focused and they just don't look big picture. They do exceptional work. Yeah. But like some things that are obvious to me, because I'm kind of looking at it from like the entrepreneurial angle, business, big picture, long-term viability, they just don't see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's different personalities. Well, finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what developers are available to join your team today. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Well, I love this part of the conversation about CTOs and dev leaders, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't understand the dynamics of some of this and the different personalities that go into it. And before we started recording, we were talking about LinkedIn and stuff, and I post on LinkedIn every day. And I talk a lot about CTO related stuff, leadership related stuff. And there is such a huge difference from being an entrepreneur, being a CTO, being very, very product focused, like business focused, versus being like a heads down engineer in the weeds. Like it's just a totally different mindset. And a lot of people just don't understand the difference. And so I always try and cover those kinds of topics.
No, this is very valuable to anybody who has an idea, who's going to venture out and try to build a product, a technology related product. Like, yes, I mean, like you said earlier, your CTO may be your initial lead engineer, but that role will evolve and their responsibilities will inevitably change. You've probably been subject to this as an engineer, especially when like iOS was introduced. Everybody and their grandma wanted a mobile app. Everybody and their grandma had a business idea, and it was baffling. Like I took a lot of things for granted. I was like, you just don't know this. And it's like, well, I've been doing this my entire life. You shouldn't know this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's challenging because a lot of people, if they're non-technical, they just feel like they're going to hire somebody and they're going to solve all of their programming, their QA, their UI, UX. And I'm like, in reality, the reason we have so many employees today is there's that many different like disciplines in order to build a quality product. You can't afford that. So you have to do what you have to do. You just have to hustle to get it out the door, and the quality will ultimately, I guess, suffer to some degree. But yeah, we're not hiring just for hiring sakes, but it is challenging. There are a lot of different disciplines that you need in order to build a good, high quality product.
So I want to talk more about your game. And one thing that I've always thought was interesting about metaverse related games and how much money people would buy property for in Decentraland or Sandbox or some of these other popular Web3 games. And they're like, well, real estate is limited. There's only so much real estate in the metaverse. And as a software developer, you and I both know there's unlimited space in software games, right? Like, there is no limit to the amount of space. I can teleport anywhere. What are you talking about? So what I love about your guys' game is it's based on Earth, right? Like, you're buying, you know, land in a physical place, and I like how it's anchored that way. So then there is a limit. Like, you're limited to the planet. Yeah, you're limited to the planet.
An obnoxiously large pool of land because our parcels are 30 by 30. But yeah, that was one of my biggest gripes about these virtual real estate platforms that weren't tethered to the real Earth was someone can introduce a new map or a new island or whatever. It was literally up to the developer's discretion to determine what your land was worth, because it's not a real scarcity problem if they could just introduce new land. Whereas right now, technically, we have a scarcity. The potential scarcity, it's a real problem, but it's not a problem right now. There's not enough people. We have a little over, I think, 3.5 million users. There's like 5 or 8 billion available parcels if you include water and outside of that. But there's a lot of land to be had here.
Okay.
But yeah, like you were saying, the other games that are in this space also have a secondary market where you can flip. Right now, we only have a primary market. We do not let players sell their land. That's something that we thought we had an idea when we originated the game concept. But having now been in practice or in business or having launched for 18 months, we've learned that we got a little homework to do in regards to making the secondary market useful for the players, not just for people who are whales, who have a lot of disposable income. We're genuinely committed to making that secondary market useful to the players who are grinding. And one of the ways that we're doing that is we're allowing them to build on their land and improve it. So yeah, it's, I was amazed that, like, I think the article I read was Atari had built a metaverse property, Snoop Dogg had bought a metaverse property, and then somebody wanted to be his neighbor, spent $1 million on the land next door. And I'm just thinking, holy hell, holy hell. Like, how vain do you have to be to want to be Snoop Dogg's neighbor in a video game? Like, that doesn't, I'm not, it's crazy. It blows my mind.
So tell me, if I go in and I get my 30 by 30 parcel, how do I, you mentioned I can earn money from rent. How That's else correct. Do I earn money in this game? You talked about going to Burger King and stuff like that, but are there people that you said grind, like, are playing the game or whatever? Like, how do they earn money in the game in other
so
ways?
So we'll differentiate, like, so you can earn in-game currency, but that in-game currency is not convertible to cash. So when I say money, I'm talking checking account. I'm going to use this. It's hard-earned cash. You can only earn money right now by collecting the rent that's generated by the land. So the more land you own, the more virtual rent you accrue, and then the more money ultimately you can earn. There is a floor of $5, so it does take some time. You can earn in-game currency by watching advertisements. You can earn in-game currency by going to buy your Whoppers and so on and so forth. But one of the things that we're focusing on, kind of related to the secondary market, is that user-generated content, these buildings, et cetera. So we're trying to figure out kind of an Etsy model. How can we kind of create this community of people who are creating structures that could then become the architects of the metaverse and leverage them to build things in the game, not only for themselves, other players, or maybe even brands. So if we have a big brand partner and they want to build it in the game, you could go and post kind of an RFP of sorts to our in-house Etsy. So right now, the only way to earn cash or real money is to own a lot of land.
So do you have whales or big users that make hundreds or thousands of dollars a month doing this?
Oh, I wish it was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Hundreds or thousands. Or thousands.
Okay, sorry. I heard that wrong. I'm thinking, no. We don't have anybody making that much money. Even the top player in the game who put in a lot of money, he is a YouTube celebrity who does kind of like card opening. His name is Open Boosters. He dropped a lot of money when we launched the game. I don't know off the top of my head how much money he's generating per month, but collectively we've cashed out of our ecosystem a little over $500,000. Now that's across all players. That's probably going to look more like a handful of people making $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month versus a few people making a couple thousand dollars. So yes, it's there aren't any players right now, to the best of my knowledge, that are making anywhere near, you know, $1,000 a month. We do have some players who have cashed out $100, but that's been accumulated over the course of months.
Okay. So is it somewhat easy for somebody to make $10 a month playing a game?
It's not easy. No, it does require we have a high session count game. I mean, easy is a subjective. Does it require you to go outside and bust your ass and sweat? No. And we have a lot of folks, and this was something that I kind of overlooked when we built this game, that are really in a bind. You know, these are the same people using Get Upside, buying gas from specific gas stations to make their 10%, you know, cash back on this. So most players that we see are doing, you know, they're not just playing Atlas Earth to make a few dollars. They're doing this across coupons and other apps where they can make a few extra dollars.
Yeah.
There's another Dosh, et cetera, where you can make a few dollars per month. We're committed, and this is something that we're still trying to figure out. We want people to be able to make a genuine passive income. There's a lot of work there. We have a lot of work cut out.
The reason I ask, and maybe you know this, I would assume you probably know this, but there's like you had games like Axie Infinity and stuff like that where you had like a million people, and I'm not even exaggerating, a million people like in the Philippines that played it every day. And they played it to make an income. And, you know, in a place like the Philippines, even if you only made $20 a month or $50 a month, like it was a super significant amount of money to them, where, you know, the average person only makes $200 or $300 a month.
Yeah.
So there are some countries where this play to earn type games are massive, especially if they can make just a small amount of passive income from it.
Yeah, there's a part of that business model, specifically with the game that you just mentioned, Axie Infinity, that makes me sick. It's, you know, they were taking advantage. They had scholarships. I dove like head first. I wanted to understand how this game worked. And it kind of imploded, and I kind of saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
But right now we are only launched in the United States. So I'm talking about Americans. They're the ones in this game. They're the ones making the $10 to $15 a month. And there are a lot of those players who are very interested in playing a virtual real estate game, watching ads. One thing I kind of overlooked, you can watch ads to earn Atlas Bucks, but you can also watch ads to generate additional rent per second. So the most straightforward way to describe this, and the disclaimer here being, this is how it works. This is how the sausage is made. It's a revenue sharing opportunity for our players. We're just a standard company who decided to take some of their profits. And what we do with that is very unique. So instead of just taking those profits and giving a percentage back to the players, we manage our own treasury. So if I were to talk about this very candidly, again, disclaimer here is this is a game. It's not an investment. It's a facade for an investment platform. You give us money. We take that money. We grow that money. And we share back some of the gains with you. We can't articulate it that way because we're not an investment company. We're a gaming company. At some point in the future, I'd love to actually be licensed and do everything above board with the SEC and say, look, this is nothing more than Robin Hood, but instead of picking a ticker, buy some land. It doesn't really matter. You just know you have some money that you want to invest and you want to grow. Let us grow it for you. This is just a game in front of it.
Okay. Oh, very cool. Well, so when you buy land in the game, can you only buy land in the United States?
Right now, you can only buy land in the United States. The next country we'll be rolling out to is Canada, and then shortly thereafter, Australia and New Zealand. You can play the game and watch ads and increase your RPS globally, but we only allow you to buy land right now in the United States.
I'm trying to figure out if I can buy like a whole country here.
There's no option right now, and you have to buy it one by one.
If you were going for the Vatican City, though, it's not very much land. Like,
yeah,
I think there's a chance.
If you're ever in downtown or the Las Vegas Strip area, or downtown Los Angeles, you can install the game and uninstall it after you see it. There's probably 5,000 individual landowners that own the New York or the Las Vegas Strip. There are some, like the president I don't know. He travels a lot, but he like went to Disney World and bought. He must have just walked very slowly and bought one by one and one by one, and he basically decimated Disney World and in Florida rather. But there's no bulk land purchasing right now. It is something that, I mean, obviously for our whales, but there's also the argument it creates kind of a disadvantage to the players who are out there grinding, wanting to buy one parcel. We'll figure it out. We're obviously a for profit business. We have to make sure that this thing is viable long term. So we'll see.
Well, one day I can buy the Vatican City on the secondary market then.
Yeah, well, that's the secondary market's where this is going to become really interesting, because it won't just be land. It will be land and improvements.
Right.
And we have to do that for legal reasons, because this is not an investment. And you have to do something to the initial purchase in order to actually sell it and not be deemed an investment. So we're allowing people to build on it. Lord knows what players are going to build. I have no doubt that there's some very creative people out there that are going to use our tooling to build some impressive structures. And I'm looking forward to having a castle in Cedar Park, Texas, which is technically where I live, right outside of Austin. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see somebody own the Vatican City and build the Vatican in 3D in Atlas Earth.
So I'm going to guess that you guys have more users than Meta has on Horizon Worlds.
I don't know how many they have.
It's zero.
Yeah, right now, they like daily actives, I'm sure it's very low. Meta gets a lot of hate, but I don't think it's completely justified. I'm a fan of what they're doing with their hardware. I do think Zuckerberg is a bit disillusioned. I don't know why they did some things that they did. I can say that we have way more users than all of the other metaverse virtual real estate platforms, DAU and MAU and revenue combined.
That's amazing. Congrats to you.
Yeah, no, that's the metric that I'm most proud of, because we're not in the news, right? And we've worked with PR agencies, and I was like, look, until someone wants to write about us, let's just not worry about it. But like, all of these other platforms are spending a tremendous amount of money to get these articles out. Like, we've sold 200,000 parcels. And I'm like, did you make any money? Is anybody making any money? Like, yeah, I mean, you can sell 2,000 or 200,000 pixels, and you know, you can push that down out to PR Newswire. But yeah, we're proud of that metric.
I just love that Zuckerberg spent billions of dollars on his metaverse and nobody uses it. And nobody uses it.
And then honestly, I remember when Second Life was launched. I was blown away and this was before I was even in the gaming industry. I never really understood how games were built. And quite honestly, I don't play video games a whole lot, but it just seemed baffling that they spent that much time, that much money, and they built something that was inferior to something that was built 12 or I keep saying 10 years, but I've been saying 10 years ago for 10 years. I don't know how old Second Life is, but it's been around for a very long time.
Well, and do you see your app becoming sort of like that, or like SimCity, like that, those sort of games?
There's some synergies. I think we will ultimately have a multi-user experience where people who own land can invite players to their actual structures, and maybe we introduce some type of extensibility where you can build, you know, primitive games, kind of like a hybrid between Rec Room, Roblox, etc. That's not our focus right now, quite honestly, but I do think that's in the cards. But I don't think our goal is not to compete with Roblox or Second Life or New Horizons. Like, that's not our goal right now.
But when I use your game, can I go walk around and talk to other people and do that kind of stuff?
Right now, you cannot communicate in-game. You can walk around, and previously you could see other players. That was actually a developer feature that bled into a production build, and it was a purple or a magenta cube, which is the texture, the default texture for a Unity game object, and nobody knew what the hell those little magenta pills were, but it was not supposed to be actually released. But right now, no, there's really no in-game social features. That is something that we are working on. It's Pandora's box. We did partner with a company called Two Hat, who has text and voice moderation tools. That was our biggest concern, is just like that toxicity. I see it in Discord. It's like, oh my God, man, it's nuts. But right now, no, you can't interact with other players in the game.
Okay. Well, if you do need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, FullScale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts when you visit fullscale.io. All you need to do is answer a few questions and let our platform match you up with our fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, or leaders. At FullScale, we specialize in building a software team that works only for you long term. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, Bo. And, you know, when I was younger, I always used to say my dream as a developer was to build something that I could walk around in. Like, I always thought that would be cool. And you have done that. And so I think that's really cool. You know, you can build it, you can build an app or a game and you can walk around in it, which I think is super, super awesome. Do you guys, your app now is a mobile app. It's on Android and Apple, right? Do you have plans to maybe make like a VR version of it as well?
Not for the core app. So internally, we refer to the mobile app as the scouting app because it requires GPS, and that's where you're out and about scouting where you're going to buy land. We're working on our internal tooling that we currently call the editor, which is going to be the experience that players, this is a web-based experience. We've learned that we should bring as much functionality to the web as possible for a multitude of reasons. A, DevEx, developer experience, is superior, and B, Apple and Google don't take 30%, Stripe takes 3%. But the tooling right now is web-based, and we're not focusing a lot of energy on mixed reality, but you better believe that experience is something that's on the roadmap for me. I want to put on an Oculus Quest or whatever the hell, the Pico, whatever you choose, and I want to be able to build buildings with very organic, natural, my hands, quite frankly. I want it to be like a Lego-like experience. But no, the primary game where you buy land, there are no plans for XR, VR, etc. But for the editor, absolutely.
And currently in your app, to buy land, you have to actually physically be on that land buy it, right?
Yes, sir.
So nobody should have bought my house by now, so I should be able
to
do that.
Well, when we launched, we didn't have anti-spoofing, which it was a cost prohibitive solution to license. And we said, you know what, we'll just let people spoof. If they spoof, we'll, you know, players will report them. We now prevent spoofing. We partner with the company called shield.com, and we've nailed that. But you might be surprised. I'm often surprised. I'll be in like obscure areas of Mississippi visiting family, and I'll open the app and I'm like, who in the hell is out here buying double wides? But I'm not going to lie, there are a lot of double wides that somebody is way ahead of their Mississippi times, and they're planning for the Southern metaverse revolution.
Awesome. Well, as we wrap up the show today, I really, really appreciate you for being on the show. Again, this was Bo Button with Atlas Realty, or Reality, sorry. And your guys' website is atlasreality.com, and you can find your apps in the App Store.
That's correct.
So definitely check them out. So as we wrap up the show, I always ask if you have any final suggestions or tips for other entrepreneurs out there.
The only tip, and this is not unique to entrepreneurialism, is like, I don't know why, like genetically, I don't know where my ancestors came from, and it's not everybody in my family. I do not give up. I do not throw in the towel until I have closure. It doesn't matter if it's a technical problem or a business problem. I need closure. I need to finish. So just don't give up. Don't give up. Just muscle through it. Even if it's difficult, you know, it can be a challenge. Trust me, this is not my first startup and not all of them have been successful. I mean, that's kind of where you learn a lot, but just don't give up. Just muscle through it.
You know, similar to that, I've seen people multiple times post about, there's a difference between playing to win and playing not to lose. And, you know, if you have the mindset of I'm not going to lose, it's almost impossible for your competitors to beat you.
Yeah.
Right. Where if you're all in and you're trying to win, you may make a lot of mistakes and, you know, ultimately you don't win. But if you play the long game and you're like, you know what, I'm not going to lose. I'm going to set myself up so it's like impossible for me to ever fail. You can do this forever. Right. It's
mindset. Yeah, absolutely. I like how you articulated that. That's, I've never heard it put that way, but no, absolutely, man.
It's a different mindset, similar to what you're, you know, talking about. You know, it's like just never giving up, and like we're gonna win this thing, and you know, you just have to keep going and keep fighting.
Yeah, there are days where you're like, I don't know how we're gonna get through this, but obviously having great partners, great employees, great culture, all of that. Like I stand on the shoulder of giants, and I'm not talking about previous successful entrepreneurs. I'm talking about hardworking employees that contribute a lot of work. Without them, we wouldn't be here.
Awesome. Well, Bo, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Matt. You have a great day, brother.
All right, take care.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.